You're listening to the oneofus.net podcast network.
Hello, One of Us listeners. My name is Nick. You may recognize my voice from One of Us shows such as The Screener Squad, The Final Watch series, and occasionally The Breakfast Pub. Recently, I ventured into the world of audiobooks and created my own production company, Mercs with Mics, which so far has been quite successful. The bad news is that it's a little too successful for me to actually keep up with the workload on. So I'm looking for some freelance audio editors to help me out with some basic editing. Things like editing out flub takes, loud breathing between dialogue, and the elimination of clicks and pops and other artifacts that might end up on the audio. Payment would start at the rate of $70 per full hour of edited audio. I'm also looking for narrators, with a decent home recording setup, and at least some previous experience in acting. If you are interested in either of these positions, please contact me at mercswithmics@gmail.com. Thank you for your time, and a special thanks to all the listeners who support oneofus.net and keep this wonderful site going. You make me proud to be one of us.
Oneofus.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber-supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to oneofus.net, keep the site and all of our great shows going, and get some terrific bonus content as well. All I can think is we must be running out of killer blank in Hollywood, in horror films, because they're just going through the list. Somewhere there's like a database that's just like, nope, done it. Nope, done it. Nope, done it.
No, they're just trying to be different from fairy tales where you die from your shoes all the time.
That's true. But that's been done. Yeah, it's been done.
Yeah.
But we've had killer laundry machine in the Stephen King adaptation, The Mangler. We've had a killer rubber tire.
A killer fidget spinner.
We had killer cars with Maximum Overdrive, didn't we?
Yeah, I mean, every car. I'm still waiting for someone to remake that.
A killer mirror and Oculus. More recently.
Just so many damn things. It's ridiculous. But somebody was like,
killer toothbrush.
Somebody's like, have we done killer dress? I can't find anything about a killer dress. Oh my God, we've got it. Write a script right now. Can we just call it Dress to Kill?
Oh wait, that's taken already.
Yeah, sorry.
Damn it.
No, I'm sure.
I love the title of this movie, In Fabric. I just think it's so avant-garde, and you know, I love it. Just ambiguous.
Really? I was just like, In Fabric.
I love
that's
it.
Odd. Okay.
Well, I didn't like In Treatment. I love In Fabric.
It being odd certainly is treated well for what is an extremely odd film.
Oh, that will decidedly
not be for everyone's tastes.
Nope.
But before we get started and define who in this room's taste this is for, let's go around the room. I'm Chris.
I'm Marco.
Mindy.
I'm Frank.
And Tessa.
Tessa's brand new joining us here, although she's certainly not brand new to talking about movies, because she is one of the programmers at Austin's Other Worlds Festival, sci-fi gathering of like-minded individuals. And you guys are actually just getting ready to get started with, you've got, what is it called?
Nicholas Meyer
doing his Time After Time, which is one of the best little hidden gem movies. I remember I grew up watching that over and over and over again.
Oh, God, yeah.
Who doesn't love Jack the Ripper traveling through time and wearing like really big collars in the 60s
and
70s?
It's a great script.
Killer collars!
Weirdly, after that, there have been several things where Jack the Ripper travels through time. I don't know if they're all just influenced by that, but it is a running thing.
Well, they remade it, tried to make it, didn't they?
Did they?
Kevin Williams, he tried to make it as a modern day series in New York, and it was a good concept, but I don't know, it just didn't gel.
Oh, I think Lindsay Ellis analyzed all those Jack Rippers.
Yeah.
It's also worth noting that Tessa's wearing a red dress, which means she's going to die tonight.
Yeah. Very apropos.
Has the rash started?
This is why we need to film this now.
Don't get anywhere near it.
This is a British, listed as horror comedy, and whether or not you find it comedic, I guess, is your results may vary.
I found it funny. Dark fantasy.
I laugh my ass off, but I see the fantasy aspect of it. It's a hybrid. This movie.
Yeah, it's hard to label it because I suppose horror is a is like one of the only things you can attach to it because there isn't really a category. But like, I think the closest that I would call it is like a dark fantasy.
Yeah. Well, this director in 2014 did The Duke of Burgundy, which was another film that sort of was like a cult movie that was making the circles. That
didn't
certainly
you like
had
that
a
movie.
I did like that movie. Yeah. That some people really liked, and other people were like, I just don't even get what was happening there. In Fabric is one of those that I think is very much. It doesn't have the same feel as that film. But it is directed towards, I would say, certainly Giallo fans, especially of the more stylish Giallos, like Argento's super stylish period. Italian, it means yellow. Yellow, what was it? It was like, the word literally means
it's
yellow.
It's yellow.
But
it's derived
originally
from the
referred
yellow pulp
to
covers.
Books, yellow, which were yellow pulp covers, really pulpy novels. But then it became a style of filmmaking, which were sort of evolved out of the police thrillers.
Yeah, I'd say like it was very 70s horror.
For sure.
Because like at least the style is very sort of technicolor, bright.
Yeah.
It had like there's a commercial for the store that's in the center of it, which like the type of film that it projected into the commercial, the writing was like really, really 70s.
Oh yeah, it's drawing from a bunch of sources from the 70s, certainly, even though it takes place in two time periods, not terribly separated. It looks like I'm never clear exactly
when. You can't
really
quite tell. It seems like the 70s and
I think
the 80s.
Wanted to be ambiguously vintage.
Yeah. But one is definitely later than the other by at least 5 years.
You see videotapes, a couple shots of videotapes lying on a TV.
But
there's like some dude has a flock of seagulls haircut.
Yeah.
There's a centerpiece of this, which is this department store, which what we constantly see this very sort of like Videodrome television commercials for.
Obey.
With these very odd people who work there, who are very extreme in the way that they talk. I don't even know how to describe it. It's not. It's
they
somewhere
have a thesaurus with them.
It's fascinated by the way they talk, though.
It's somewhere between Shakespearean and Dickensian.
Yeah, it's like all of them. You have to memorize a thesaurus before you work there.
Right, but they're selling the shit. Is all I can say. They know how to describe things in a way that you're like nobody talks that way. But you go really. You think I look that good in this?
And not just speaking that way, they also dress like they're Victorians. They have like the petticoats and
very
the
Edwardian.
The lace and the high-necked buttoned dresses and the bustles.
We
the
first hair. Meet Lady Sheila, recently divorced. She's a bank teller. She lives with her son, Vince, who looks like he's maybe 20-something.
Yeah.
Hard to say.
He is sponging.
Who himself is wants to be an artist.
He's in school.
He has a model/girlfriend. Played by Gwendolyn Christie, who is funny. You're like, the moment when you realize it's Gwendolyn Christie is because she's like 80 feet tall standing next to the main actress. You're like, wait, who is that? It's got to be Gwendolyn
Christie.
Well,
she's also sitting in every scene here. So I think one of the most characteristic things about Gwendolyn Christie is obviously her height. And she's sitting in every single scene, I think. And also
in the shower.
And she's in a black, and she's also in a black wig. And I missed the credits. I
saw her name in the credits.
So I saw this before. I'm double dipping in this one, folks. But I saw this, the first time I saw this movie, I missed the credits. I didn't even know she was in it. And I did not know that she was in it until after I looked at the IMDb stats. I was like,
I would not have recognized her, quite frankly. But so she's the mom, Sheila. She's lonely and she's going through, answering lonely hearts things in the newspaper.
She's a divorcee.
And the store, I did mention that for the record. Okay. The store says, sells her on this red dress that, shouldn't fit her. Because the size is wrong, but it fits her perfectly. And she goes out with it. And the thing, as this starts to go along, it becomes aware that the dress is, I don't want to say self-aware, but, or possessed.
Venom. It'll just fit to anybody.
But it's clearly evil. Yeah, right? It's clearly evil. Like, when she sleeps, it hovers over her at night.
It gives her a rash.
It gives her a weird rash over her breast, which we find is a distinctive, almost like which feels like a very Suspiria type of thing.
Well, it's a branding, isn't it? It's claimed this person.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody who wears this gets this mark on their chest.
And as it goes along, it becomes clear. She becomes clear. Something's wrong with this dress. I don't know what, but something's wrong with it. And The people who work in the department store seem to be linked to it in some sort of way. They're doing very strange things with mannequins in their store. talking about whether or not are the people who work in the store becoming mannequins, or are the mannequins becoming people who work in the store?
Yeah, there's a weird like holding cell of people that is like, wait, who are they?
We're looking down from the window to the people waiting for the doors.
Yeah, those are the shoppers.
Those
are the shoppers.
Those are all the people lined outside dying to get in.
They're imprisoned to the
consumerism.
There's definitely a lot of consumerist imagery in this. And
but I love that when the, because I you know, I lived in London for a while, and the January sales it's different than Black Friday. Black Friday is just madness, but this is such like, I mean, it's such a specific mindset. People really live and die for these January sales, and it really holds the month up for them. Yeah. Now, and I love that this is a sort of like a comment, like kind of like a poking fun at the people, like at that culture, and how like, you know, life and death is the January sales are for them, and everybody goes to the sales. It's ridiculous.
Oddly, and when you buy something, not, and it's enhanced by the way that the salespeople talk, but it's like, this is, you're not just buying a dress, you're buying something that is going to influence your life forever. No. And these people are going to, you know, come in and create full circle. and it's just like, it's not just a thing, it's an expression of life.
Well, she's like, what she say when Marianne Jean Baptiste, who plays Sheila, says, "I'm not sure about this dress," and the sales lady says, "The echo, the hesitance in your voice, soon to be in echoes in the recesses of the spheres of retail."
Yeah,
and it's just like
they talk about, you know.
Okay,
I will buy it. Yes,
you've threatened the retail paradigm or something like that.
Exactly. Marianne Jean Baptiste, by the way, you might know if you ever saw the 1996 film Secrets and Lies, where she won. She got two nominations, the Oscar and the Globe, for Best Supporting Actress from that.
She's fantastic in that.
This movie, strangely, about halfway through, suddenly switches to someone else's story and a later period of time as we meet a laundry repair man.
Yes. Who's getting married.
Yeah, who's getting married, and he is kind of an oddball
himself. He's a sad sack, let's be real.
He's played by Leo Bill, who's been a bunch of stuff. He was just in the show Taboo. Mm-hmm. He was in Alice in Wonderland, and the show The Fall, The Living and the Dead. He's one of those guys you're like, I've seen him in something, mm-hmm. which I think we were all saying.
Yeah, he's a very good character actor, I feel.
Oh, wait, he was supposed to be the betrothed for Alice in Alice in Wonderland. He was a little simpering little dude.
Yeah, he's one of those guys who's got no chin, and he just, like, you can't believe anyone would have sex with him. But he's got a fiance. We meet him.
I kind of think he's actually uncharacteristically cute, but that's just me, sorry.
You have a type.
I don't have a type. That's the thing.
Fair. Okay.
My number one question is Joel McHale. I don't have a type.
Fair. Yeah. Okay. So, your number one crush is Michelle Pfeiffer.
Well, well, that's above anything else.
But
that defies.
But when we meet him, he is playing Reg. When we meet him, it's his bachelor party or stag party, as they call it in England. And they're at this bar, and somebody picked up the dress in question at
some
sort of thrift store.
It's obvious that he doesn't want to be at this party. His future father-in-law arranged it with his thug friends.
Everybody, right. I think this marriage was just like arranged without his consent. Well, you know, she proposed to him, probably.
Yeah, well, it's like they're together since they were 17, and it feels like from both of them, it's just like, well, we've been together so long, I guess we get married.
Keep doing this,
And they bought this dress for him to put on, which I get. Is that an English stag party tradition? I have no idea, but he has to wear the dress.
Humiliating the groom is traditional,
right? But you know, he gets way wasted and wakes up the next day, and he's just unbelievably hungover, and he's got the rash, and you're like, uh-oh.
The mark of the dress.
Of course, his wife sees it. That's the interesting thing about this movie, is that halfway, it kind of feels like an anthology series.
Yeah.
And I almost wish they had gone that route, instead of trying to put, you know, this could have been two films, and halfway through, you know, you switch over to the first. Sheila is such a strong and compelling protagonist that when we get to Reg, I mean, I admit I kind of resented him for a while.
Well, it's also because
I hate this guy.
You kind of like, I hate like wimps. God, I'm sorry to say it. Yeah, but like, dude, I mean, you're in your late 20s, early 30s. They should have dropped by now. Why and they haven't for him. And so I think that Sheila is, because Sheila is actually a journey. You see her getting like, you know, coming out of her shell and picking herself up and, you know, this and that.
And I will say that Sheila, it felt like Sheila's was much more realistic.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
like totally. She was a, and granted, there was the farcical elements of her bosses or supervisors at work, and there was the stuff with the, you know, the some stuff that was like with there's a lot of sex weird stuff.
I wanted to talk about her boss because we're talking about Carter. And the boss, one of the bosses is Moon from the Mighty Boosh, Julian Barrett, I want to say. So yeah, I saw him immediately. I was like, what?
It's just like, but she has a journey of, you know, being a divorcee and being, you know, taken advantage of. And then she goes and finds somebody who actually feels like they're starting to get along and she's starting to, you know, get it off her feet. And then when it goes to the second story, it is a lot more farcical. Like when he talks, people go into a euphoric sort of mind fuck.
Yeah. And only when he's describing how, what's wrong with laundry machine.
Right. Yeah. Right. And he has a boss that doesn't speak, that just stares at him, and then there's it just feels a lot more farcical it doesn't quite mesh between the realism and the not.
I think also because you feel more protective of Sheila.
You do.
I think you're more invested in her and you like her more because you're genuinely happy for her, and she, you know, and you know her journey does become progressive apart from the killer dress. It's progressively better. She meets a great guy. You know, she stands up to her son about some of his ways
and his weird ass girlfriend.
I find Gwen disgusting. You know, and so you know, yeah, and so that makes it all. Like, the
more... I'm staying over at his place. Isn't it too early for you to date? Or wasn't for your dad.
No, she's like, aren't I allowed?
Yeah, aren't I allowed?
but here's the thing. When you mentioned the bank tellers, because Sheila works in a bank. And these are her bosses. And later on, we'll see Reg have to go to these guys to get a loan. And both films, I mean, they feel like both films. At some point, it felt a little too long to me. There's certain beats that play out in both segments, which I thought was odd. Of course, there's the store. There's the guys at the bank.
You mean like the shared,
there's the washing machine.
Sort of thing?
It almost felt like I couldn't tell if it was just a lack of ideas or leaning into a joke, or if there were certain elements that had to occur in a certain way as a condition of coming into contact with this dress.
I took it as more of the joke than anything else.
It's just like these are ridiculous people.
Yeah, they really set the absurdity of the whole thing.
Of the avant-garde-ness of it.
There is a surrealism that's very intentional here that sometimes dips into absurdism in the way that Rubber was more absurd. But it also feels to some level, it's not really sure how to play that, because sometimes it's definitely going for the like surreal to be creepy, and other times it's going, this is supposed to be outlandishly absurd. That crossover never happened organically for me, but they're both entertaining in their own way. This does feel like this assemblage of really neat ideas that doesn't completely coalesce, but it's certainly a really interesting watch.
Yeah,
and as things about it, I think, are tremendously cool. Like, for instance, the score, I thought,
was
perfect.
What is the name of this band? Because it's an incredible name.
Cavern of Antimatter.
Cavern
yes!
of Antimatter.
I mean, it's the most giallo thing about the entire movie is the score, for sure. But it's really great.
Like, also, just the look. The look is so delightful. The vintage and the modern together was just delightful.
Do you know what this reminds me of in that regard, and also just in the nature of this, the Bavarian, what was it?
Barbarian Mind
Film Studio.
Barbarian Film,
which is the same
sound
director.
Studio.
Is the same director?
Barbarian
same writer director.
What? Oh, I did
it
not
is?
Know that.
Yes, it is.
Did I miss that?
I think we talked about it a little bit.
Is it?
That's the one Barbarian film of his that I have.
You're right. That's 2012. Yeah, wow. Barbarian Sound Studio.
Yeah.
So and good eye there.
Which I like that. I have it
double
if you want to see it.
I would
one
watch
of
the two
after
them together.
Season.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of interesting things at play here, and this is obviously not going to appeal to anyone like who goes, like, I want everything to make sense, because it's not designed that way. It's obviously, you're supposed to get a lot of feelings out of this, a lot of, like, visual, like a visual sensations, if you will, that they're trying to create, or atmospheres that I think, on the whole, are very effective. It's just, trying to make this kind of movie is a very tricky balance. There's only a few people who I think who've really 100% nailed it. I'm looking at you, David Lynch, Mulholland Drive. but, and this doesn't, but that doesn't make it not entertaining. I definitely enjoyed it. I don't see myself ever declaring, I love this movie, but there's more than enough here to appreciate that it makes me, much like Barbarian Sound Studio was, where I'm like, I would definitely watch anything else this guy does.
Yeah, I mean, I never forgot that experience of that movie, and I haven't forgotten this. I watched this back in July, and I came back, and it's screener season. There's lots of stuff I need to be watching, and I'm double dipping in this. Yeah. I mean, just because it's just... I mean, it's just,
But by your own admission, you were wasted when you watched this.
Well, I mean, not wasted. I had wine. Because, okay, so I watched Midsummer first at a theater when I was visiting some friends. And we had some, we were like, yeah, let's stay here. They got great wine. We just watched Midsummer. Let's watch something else. Oh, this In Fabric movie. I'm like, oh, it hasn't come out yet. I want to watch that. And, it's just more wine. But it was wine then, it was beer now, and I loved it both times. So, yeah.
Yeah, fair. Well, let's go to final thoughts. Mindy, why don't you get us started on this one?
Well, as you said, this film is rather avant-garde, and you are absolutely right in that it kind of goes back and forth between its realism and its avant-gardeness, which means that the tone isn't quite as fluid as it could be. But it is entertaining in its weirdness, especially the people in the shop, because it you know something weird is going on there, that some supernatural, Satan-y, witchy kind of thing, but you don't exactly know what, and it's never really explained either, so you get to imagine it. And so, those that, yes, you're right, those that want concise, this is the way the story goes and everything is linear, they ain't gonna like this. But for those that are willing to accept, I'm thinking of in our theater community, anyone who sees a Vortex show will love this. They will love anything, the ethos, Vortex, they will fucking love this.
Vortex, by the way, for those of you who don't live in Austin, is a theater company here that has a great location and tends to do theater a little more oddball than your average place.
Everyone is covered. I have personally been painted and topless and covered in dirt, and that's the sort of stuff that we do a lot. It is, you know, very beautiful in regards to its visuals. Like I said, it's very 70s, and it's a very interesting way of doing modern vintage, I guess, is the best way of saying it. It's the tone that makes it kind of... jerky, but it's a fun ride because you're spending a lot of the time going, I'm just gonna rock with this.
You just go with it.
Yeah, you just go with it. It's not like an insulting huh. It's a huh. Okay. And so I don't think it would be something that I would watch over and over again, but I don't hate the fact that I saw it, kind of thing. So I'm going to give it 7 Merkins for your mannequin out of 10.
Marco?
I mean,
almost
this...
said Merkin. I'm
Professor Merkin Muffley to you. I do think that this has got all the potential to be a cult film in coming years. Something that you might see on the same bill with, like, crazy shit like Suspiria or you know, Beyond the Black Rainbow, Videodrome, and all of those kinds of films. I think this could potentially find an audience one day, but as Chris said, this is not going to be for everybody. I found I found it to be a bifurcated tale. I had a really appealing protagonist to root for, and then suddenly the movie kept going after I thought it had reached a logical conclusion, and there were a lot of beats that were repeated that I think more often than not were done so for comedy, but also kind of made me feel like I've seen this already. Show me something new with this premise. That being said, it is so oddball that it's hard not to enjoy it. I mean, it's so strange. Even if you'll just be laughing at a witty line, or you'll simply be laughing in incredulity at what you just saw. And any movie whose special effects budget is comprised almost entirely of, like, fishing line is got something going for it. Really great effects using just, you know, Ooh, the dress is floating. Oh, what? It's crawling under the door. You know, there's just a grip back there just pulling on it. And yet that works. I love that very simple sleight of hand. So yeah, this is
bird cage, and now it's dead.
Yeah, somebody threw the dress up, and then they rolled the film and waited for it to land in just the right place. It's that kind of movie, and yet it's so audacious in its presentation, and so clearly lovingly crafted that I can't fault it too much. Like Mindy, probably not going to revisit it very often, but I definitely think this has got cult hit all over it. See it at a midnight screening with a shitload of wine if you ever get a chance. Apparently, according to Frank, that's the ideal way to see it.
I mean, I had beer this time. And I liked it just as much.
So yeah. Any alcoholic beverage of your choosing.
Or cold sober. Why
or yeah, any substance, illicit or otherwise, to help you enjoy the experience. I'm going to give this 7 out of 10 sales tags.
Frank?
I love this movie. I really do. It is, like we've always said before, it is for very specific tastes. But it is for my taste. No question at all. I think it requires you to surrender a lot, which, you know, as much as, you know, as many movies as this group sees, for me personally, it's hard to do. But I was willing to do it for this movie, and mainly because I was kind of buzzed. But, the absurdity of this movie is so strong. It's so great. And, you know, just the way it's crafted, I think, is really great as well. I mean, I love, like, you coined it modern vintage. It really is that. And it's also the name of my favorite 6 a.m. album, by the way. Shout out, Nikki Sixx's band. But
anyway. I don't know what's happening right now.
Sorry. but it's... I didn't know it was the same guy that did Bavarian Sound Studios, but that movie left an impression. This movie leaves such an impression to me, on me. It's so wonderfully hilarious. It's so lovingly crafted, and it feels like, you know, like Marco was saying, it's, you know, the effects are so simple, but, you know, they work. It feels like a really great Night Gallery episode. It's true the second half is not as strong as the first half. But there's always, every time you split a movie up into, you know, different, you know, stories and different segments, one's always going to be better than the other. One's always going to shine above all the others. That's the case here. But it is inventive. It is creative. It's so audacious, and it's so, you know, I love that this filmmaker is about a killer dress. I mean, this is not an idea, and, you know. For A24 to pick this up is great. I love this movie. I think it's batshit crazy. It's totally bananas. It's the nuttiest horror movie you're ever going to see, for my money. It's made my shortlist for Best Supporting Actress, Best Score, Best Production Design. I'm going to give this 8.5 out of 10 January sales. Because my birthday is January, and all my friends were literally shopping.
Bastards.
Yeah, I know.
Were they
shopping
for you?
No, they weren't shopping for me. They were
Would you like me to give you a red dress, Frank? No, I got it at a great price.
Because when I was living in London, they were all about the January sales and, you know, couldn't spend that much on my birthday, but that's okay.
Tessa, what about you?
Oh, gosh. Follow up with everybody after everybody. I don't know how much more I can add on that.
Then just reiterate.
Oh, no, I'll just go on a whole other tangent. Being that I can't think of the last time I was more scared of a piece of fabric. I think it was last time I was watching Drag Me to Hell with that handkerchief scene outside of the car. So I feel like that's a pretty good comparison. But like you were saying previously, like, it got your best of. It won like 8 awards. And I kind of disagree with Chris. I feel like it pulled off what it wanted to. It just depends on what your goalposts are for quote unquote pulling it off. And it's like, I don't know. I wanted more. I want to know more about the people that worked in that store. I want to know more about this.
Those are the best scenes.
Cult of consumerism. I wanted more of that. And I was really bummed out when we changed characters, like everybody else was saying. I was kind of sad to move on off of Sheila to Reggie. But I would give this probably 8 firm handshakes out of 10.
Sure. Yeah, I think really where this film broke for me was that splitting into a new story, because the momentum just dissolves. And it's really building up momentum. And it actually has a point that's just gets to surreally frightening at the end of the first segment. I wanted to see that. I just don't understand why you couldn't have done this story in a way that it's just following her story all the way to the end. And I think it would have been just so much better and effective at what it was trying to do if it took the things it wanted to do with the second story and made it part of her story instead. You know, maybe even introduce him as another character in her story.
Or swap the segments. Just have the Reggie segment go first.
Oh, but swapping? I don't know. Really?
I don't know. I think that...
Save the best for last.
I think it's not well... See, I'm not sure that one is necessarily better.
Or maybe break it up to
better.
Make it a third one.
Would anyone like a third segment of this movie?
I actually think that would be good because, like, slim it down... For each segment down, add a third segment just to show how this dress moves along.
Like I said, not for me. I would have liked if they just found one story that was continuing on here to way to fuse these two together into one solid continuing tale. I don't think there's anything wrong with the second segment. I don't think it's better or worse than the first one. It's just, okay, here we go. Now we got to go through all these things again and build up to that point. And it doesn't have anywhere near as good of a payoff, I thought, than the first one did. It's a very silly sort of a play on, to some degree, on the end of Suspiria, but in kind of what I felt was a little on the nose. I mean, it's still bizarre in its surrealism in a way that's not like that. But this is a movie very much worth seeing, even if you don't think it's a perfect movie. I think it's far from a perfect movie. That's definitely the type of film I'm super glad that I saw. This is the sort of film I'm super glad that people are making, and that there is now officially an audience for this type of film that makes them want to give this distribution, that makes companies like A24 want to pick it up. I do want to see more filmmakers unafraid to try this sort of thing, because this is ballsy as hell. No question about it at all. It doesn't work 100% for me, but, you know, hey, there is more than enough here for me to advise those who have liked previously films like the original Suspiria and Rubber to say, if you like both those films, this is probably, you're probably either going to like love it or come to where I am. But either way, be glad you saw it. I'm going to give this 7 out of 10 really aggravated washing machines.
I think that's called agitating.
Yeah, agitating. Yeah, sorry.
Because
you
got the wigwam and it went off the belt and it hit the bolts in the cam off. If you open it up, I can just see inside.
I don't know what you're talking about, but I love the way you say it.
The back, I just need permission to go and...
Would you like to wear a Tudor costume? It makes the fantasy more real.